Well, Hogan, after New Hampshire and Iowa, it's pretty much all over but the shouting, wouldn't you say, in the presidential Republican primary contest?
100%. And no one has ever won Iowa and New Hampshire. He won them over 50%. He's going to win Nevada and then on to South Carolina over Nikki Haley, where he's up by like 40 points. This is all done, as you said. And I'm so excited about our guest today because no one knows more about it than this particular individual.
Yeah, this is a good one. I would say this is a good get, and let's get right to it because this is the Line Drive Podcast. And we are joined today, honored today, I would say, by the presence of really, I think, the finest guest that we have had to this point. Ooh. The great, the one and only Chris LaCivita, campaign manager to former president. Current candidate for President Donald J. Trump. Chris, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Great to see you.
Great to see you. I've been knowing you since you hired me from my first ever political job in 1999. As I'm sure you remember, it gave me sort of a tryout at the state Republican Party and then on to the George Allen for U.S. Senate campaign back in 2000, you know? Yeah. And so let's how did you live before we get into the current day's race? How did you get your start? I've known you for over 25 years, but how did you get into campaign politics?
No, I appreciate that. And Hogan, good to see you as well. It's funny. I got involved in politics, really. I mean, I've always been involved in politics, on one level or another. But when I got out of the Marine Corps back in 1991, I came home and ended up volunteering I was the campaign manager for this guy running for the Board of Supervisors. And was the Board of Supervisors seat in Chesterfield County, a guy named Art Warren. And they gave me $500 and $50 for expenses. And it was a party canvas, which is like a one-day, one-site location voting. Anyway, he ended up winning this, and then I ended up going and doing a congressional race, a special election for some guy named George Allen, Tim, right, who you know. And then it was off to the races. I got lucky extremely early in my career and found a winner, and was with George through, his term as governor, became ED of the party in Virginia, which is where you and I first met. You were a TV reporter for Channel 29, as you know, in Charlottesville, and you were the bureau chief in Richmond. And back then, there was an awful lot of press presence at the state capitol, and you had a, so I've known Tim a long time.
Long time. Yeah. So now you are the campaign manager for the former president of the United States,
running co-manager. For his old job back.
Co-manager.
Share that distinction and that title, because as much as we hate titles and we really don't even go by them, with the one and only Susie Wiles, who really is the glue that holds everything together. But yes,
no question.
So I was going to ask you how does that work? What is the structure? What's the arrangement? How are you guys working together?
It's funny because I've only known Susie really well a year, but I felt like I've known her all my life. So probably the in this business, it's really hard to find people that think like you. And I'm not talking in a philosophical sense or an ideological sense. I'm talking about the way you view the world vis-a-vis expectations management. The word no doesn't exist. Don't tell me it can't be done. Tell me how it can get done. I mean, so she and I are really simpatico, and those are very important, I think, characteristics, because they do not create daylight. There's no daylight between she and I. And if there is, we work it out privately, but there hasn't been. So, we talk 5-6 times a day when we're not actually physically together in the campaign headquarters or on the road. It's just great. It's a really good one that traditionally would not work. But if you, because to be the top person in a campaign, that's what everybody strives to do. But, our goal is to win. I don't give a shit about, who's first, but, we'd rather make sure the boss is first on election day. And that's our focus. And so that just makes it a lot easier.
And making sure the principal is first, in this case, the former president of the United States, is such a unique thought amongst the consulting class, the campaign manager class for sure. And watching you guys, I've been up close and personal, a couple of events you guys have done together. I've worked with Susie in the past, you as well. Yep. Watching y'all work together is fascinating to me. And I think it works for Donald Trump, especially having been on the campaign in the White House with him too. Yep. He likes that kind of give and take. He likes to have a couple of people where he trusts you. He appreciates your efforts, your ability, and then what you can actually accomplish. I think that's key for him. So speaking of accomplishments,
right,
we're to a point now where Donald Trump has really been dominant in this in this process. Tell us kind of how he got there and then also what you see moving forward.
I mean, you know, it's pretty simple. You put together an aggressive, an aggressive field operation. We put it together, you know, very traditional. It's not like it was anything different, except that, you know, we put an emphasis, I like to call it a people-centered campaign that has been data-enhanced, right? In politics in the 21st century, so many people like to talk about data, 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 big data, big data, and they lead with data, and they take the context, they take people out of, you know, the politics. And so, you know, I come from the school where it's the people that make that stuff happen. And that, I think that was kind of representative of the type of operation that we built and continue to build in other states, the kind we had in Iowa, which was very local driven. We didn't hire, you know, kids from San Francisco or from Southern Florida or from Texas to door knock in Iowa. Right. Which is, you know, the entire thing that Ron DeSantis did. But and then, you know, and again, we put an emphasis and a premium on the campaign building the operation. Nikki Haley doesn't even have a field game. She's, you know, she's subcontracted that out to the China First crowd over at AFP, which is always feeble people. And so, you know, and by the way, there's like a million different things you call AFP. So people should have fun with that one. But, you know, and what's going forward? I mean, look, we've been putting together an organization in South Carolina for a while. We have, I mean, you have to remember in July 6th, I think it was, we had 85,000 people, 85,000 people show up for a rally. And it was 106 damn degrees. So, I mean, you know, you wanna play? Okay. You wanna dance? Let's dance. I mean, this is it's I'm sorry, but it's gonna be embarrassing. It's gonna be embarrassing. And Nikki Haley sticks it out because we're just gonna pummel her.
Yeah. So how are you approaching that? I mean, because everyone is saying
just
I mean,
like we did everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, it's almost universal that people are saying, look, the primary is long over. She needs to just get out of the way. So 100%. How do you pivot to the general or do you continue to pummel her and put her out of business completely? What do you do?
Well, I mean, you know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, right? You know, from the standpoint of you got to remember in when we were in Iowa and a lot of what we were doing on a national level, even, you know, back in December and November, a lot of our messaging had been directed at Joe Biden. And you know, the benefit of that was that it's obviously a message that Republicans are receptive to. And obviously the general electorate is susceptible to. So, you know, I don't see any change or even necessarily a need for a quote unquote pivot because we've been doing it. We're just going to continue doing it.
So I'm from South Carolina, as you know, Chris, was ED of the party too. So you and I have that in common as former party folks. What was so fascinating to me in New Hampshire was on that stage when he would give rallies, whatever, behind him were like all of the statewide office holders from South Carolina, those who would know Nikki best. In addition, Senator Tim Scott was there, who Nikki appointed to that position first.
Yeah,
it really does kind of show a coalescence of folks out there looking at this landscape and saying, listen, we understand what's happening here. It's time to focus on Joe Biden. Trump is the guy. Let's not worry about Nikki and other factors. But you still have to defeat her in all of these states. And what I hear you saying is, as the old adage, you know, there are two ways to run elections, unopposed and scared. Donald Trump's not scared of anything, but it seems like you guys are running as if you're behind. You're saying, we're not taking it for granted. We're building out the organizations because, you know, it's not just for the primary, right? It's for the general ultimately. Is that what I'm sensing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, everything that we do, everything that we engage in is good from the standpoint of it, that it prepares us for the general election, whether that's look, we are stress testing the organization and we're doing it in real time. And that gives us, so, I mean, you know, as much of a pain in the ass as this stuff is, everybody needs practice because practice makes perfect. And so that's essentially what we're engaged in right now. Kim, you know, George Allen was always fond of saying back in the day, you know, this is a scrimmage.
An inter-squad scrimmage, right.
Yeah, yeah, and it's putting us in a position to play, you know, to get engaged on the other level. So stress testing the organization is great, whether, you know, obviously the grassroots side of it in Iowa and New Hampshire, and the same way there in South Carolina.
George Allen, a lot of people talk about, people of, another generation maybe, talked about Ronald Reagan as the one who got them involved in Republican politics in the first place. For me, George Allen was my personal Ronald Reagan. That's yeah. Why I got involved in the first place. So the big talk of, among other things, but people are fascinated by the idea of who the president might choose as his vice president. I know that will be his choice and his choice alone. Do you talk about with him, and what's going on? What does that look like? What do those discussions look like right now?
I heard it was going to be Hogan, so I'm just saying.
It might be.
Unless you want to win. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't speculate on that. I don't talk about it. It's just, you know, those are things that we keep pretty private, and you know, the boss, you know, has an idea of the type of person I think that he wants. So, you know, we'll let him do that.
So the media has kind of created this narrative, mm-hmm. right, that Trump is going to have a tough time pulling an independence. He's got the base, but he's got to broaden that tent, et cetera, et cetera. What is the campaign's thought on that mentality? Is it completely wrong, or are there ways that you guys are going to bring that America First message, that kind of MAGA movement, to the masses and say, this is how we can get the country back on track? What are your plans?
Well,
not to give away the store, but
yeah. Well, I wouldn't, but so it's funny because for the last six months, even continuing to today, the volume of national polling, state-based battleground polling that exists privately and publicly, which is an enormous amount, have consistently shown one thing. That's Donald Trump is actually winning by at least a half a dozen points nationally, and winning by about a handful or within in all the battleground states. So in order to be in that kind of position, you actually have to win the independents. You have to win the people that are unaffiliated more or less with a party. And it's not by accident that as soon as the results, or the day of the New Hampshire primary, when it was clear what the results were going to show, that the mainstream media starts popping these, I like to call, bullshit stories about Donald Trump can't win. I mean, how many times have we heard that?
Sure.
So it's so predictable. But there's such a level of mistrust created basically by themselves. I mean, they've done everybody's work for them. They've made themselves a very unreliable communicator, so people just don't really buy the bullshit. So, you know, it's a but that being said, that doesn't mean we think, oh yeah, we've got it sewn up. I mean, we know anything but you know, if there is a reason why we talk about the issues and they talk about this, you know, oh, you know, Trump's bad for XYZ, right? They want to make it about Trump, the person. We want to make it about the issues that affect, you know, the average Joe in the wallet, that affect, you know, the average voter and their, you know, whether it's on the issue of education, whether it's regulation, whether it's business. I mean, so we have all of those things on our side. They cannot afford to have a debate about the economy, inflation, national defense, where we stand on the world stage, Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because they lose. So they want to make it about something else. I've always felt that the American people don't vote on process. They vote on policy.
Yes.
So you just kind of rattled off a whole series of issues there. And I think the race is going to boil down to, it's no secret. And when it's Biden against Trump, it's going to be a comparison of the two presidencies, right? The two administrations and a view towards the future. In my mind, when Trump was president versus when Biden was president, I mean, the country was better in one circumstance and worse in the other. Is it as simple as that? Are you just going to hold up the two, or is that one facet of it? Hold up the two and say basically the old Reagan question: are you better off now than you were 4 years ago, or not?
Well, that question's been asked. People know the answer, right? Politics, you never ask a question you don't already know the answer to. But you know, I mean, there are so many avenues for us and roads for us to go down that I think it's really incumbent on us to make it and change it up as much as possible, but with one consistent thematic, you know, which is Joe Biden is too weak to lead your family, too weak to lead America. And how do you define that? You also define that it's Biden that's really against democracy, right? Biden against democracy. That stands for BAD. and you know, they want to make the campaign, you know, about so many things that are not necessarily impactful from a policy standpoint, but you know, there's, like I said, there's just so many different places for us to go, and we, I think, have been pretty straightforward on the issues dealing with, like, the border. I mean, you know, that's just a complete shit show. Look what's going on in New York City, for instance. You know, people finally realized, oh, the border issue is not one that just affects border states; it's affecting everybody. So, you know, and of course, inflation, jobs. I mean, they talk about all the jobs they created, but there was a report out yesterday that the vast majority of those jobs are government jobs. Government. And yeah. That's the view of, you know, Biden. Everybody's going to be on the government tit. That's how they view success. That's also how the communists define success. Before you know it, they'll start making fucking ball bearing plants. Everybody will be making ball bearings.
Yeah,
it's all ball bearings.
It's all ball bearings these days. Yeah,
that's right.
Listen, Chris, so fascinating, because you hit on something I think is important for people to understand, and that is, what the left wants you to ignore, what Biden wants you to ignore, is that, you know, the fact that you're having to pay more for gas and for groceries and for rent and for, you know, car payments and house payments and everything else. And the world's on fire and crime and drugs pouring across our southern border, et cetera. And instead, Donald Trump's just a bad guy. That argument's flawed for so many reasons, but Biden's not a good guy at all. And I think the American people are starting to see, wait a minute, they're kind of projecting onto Donald Trump all the problems they have that are actually real. So I guess in the face of this incredible wave that the left is going to kind of rain down upon the campaign of trying to push this in coordination with big tech and Hollywood and the mainstream media, Donald Trump's a fighter. He's going to fight back. Are there ways that you guys are going to use those local contacts and you know, groups at the state levels to kind of not just dispel with those myths, but just remind people what's at stake and what's actually going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's all locally driven, right? That's why it's really important that you have a campaign that's people-powered, right? It's people-centered. Right. And, you know, people are more apt to believe their neighbors than they are, say, you know, MSNDC, DNC, or you know, fake Tapper on CNN, or you know, whatever you want to call it for any given channel. But I think that's really important. We cannot rely on filters. Now, the, you know, a bigger problem is, and we're not going to push our message through the filter, but a bigger problem is definitely big tech. Clearly, you know, the things that they pulled in 2020. You know, we've got to make sure that that you know, look, we are going to be, the fact that we're organized and we know what we're doing should scare the shit out of all of them. because we're going to be on top of them like white on rice. You're talking about every level.
On how do you get ready for that? Because big tech, I can tell you, for the in the closing days of 2020, when they squelched the Hunter laptop story and completely suppressed that story, it was a big problem, and I think it proved to be really damaging to the end result. How, you know, in real time, because they're going to do it. Big tech is going to try to censor Trump himself, the Trump campaign, Trump surrogates, just regular voters. How do you combat that in real time? I mean, is there a way to do it? Have you guys talked about this?
I think it's one of these things that's a continual conversation that you continue to have. But you know, it's funny because big tech sells, right? They want to come to the campaign and they want to sell their wares. They want to sell their ad space. They want to sell their, and it's sort of like, you know, why would you sign an agreement to engage and spend money with a platform that potentially, you know, would be pulling the plug on you? I think from a business standpoint, they understand that. I think they understand the, you know, what happened in 20 is no bueno, you know. I think the campaign and the president's consistent mentioning, discussing about all of these things has had to some extent an impact on, you know, not only big tech, but also on the people out there that want to cheat again. Right. I mean, it's the easiest way to kill mold is to put a bunch of sunlight on it. So I think that that's going to be strategy number one, is just, you know, keeping people informed publicly in a very big way. I mean, no one has a microphone bigger than, you know, than Donald Trump's. And no one can bring a level of attention to an issue than he can. So he's our best messenger in that regard. So, you know, again, it's just something we're going to have to stay on top of all the way to the end. And you know, we won't be shy about it.
There is a piece there that you just said, I know people are going to want to hear about. And that is the concern about all the illegalities, irregularities, anomalies, fraud that go on during these elections. And I remember in 2016, when Donald Trump first won, it was your patriotic duty, of course, to question the election. And if you didn't, you were somehow working for Vladimir Putin. Right. So we know this is a joke. And 60, they were harping on NBC about how 68% of Iowa voters said that Donald Trump actually won in 2020. And I was like, well, yeah, but that 64% thought Hillary won. They still believe Hillary won in 2016. So it's kind of the same. What are you guys doing to prepare to make sure that every legal vote and every legal voter are protected in the upcoming election?
Well, it's a recognition from a very early on that you need to have a robust 50 state voter integrity effort. And you can't start it in July of the election.
Yes.
It's been ongoing. I know that you've been involved in some efforts, and you know, it's first of all making sure that all of the entities that are out there wanting to do something on that are working in a coordinated fashion. I know the RNC is going to make that a top priority of ensuring that that doesn't happen. But for people to understand, you actually can impact, people can impact that. The campaigns can definitely impact that. I saw that firsthand in 2022 in the state of Wisconsin with Senator Ron Johnson's reelect, of which I was the chief strategist. And, you know, Senator Johnson was, and continues to be, but was then extraordinarily passionate about ensuring that, you know, the votes weren't stolen. And he willed it. just by his tenacity. But we sued and did drop boxes. And there were a lot of actions the campaign took early on to ensure that the vote wouldn't be stolen. Plus, Ron would hold press conferences saying, if you're stealing the vote, we're watching you and we're going to take you to court. So, you know, again, that sunlight, which I think is a really important part. So, you know, a 50-state strategy is really, really important to ensure, because we have the resources and the people to make sure it doesn't happen. We just need to make sure they're utilized correctly and they know what to look for.
Yeah. Hey, so Jim, I know you got a question. I just want to make this comment. You hit, again, something so important. They hate sunlight. If there's one thing the left hates, is transparency, whether they're trying to trans your kids behind your back or teach them critical race theory in school or what they're teaching in college, voter ID, et cetera. They don't want any sunlight. They want to just keep operating in the shadows so no one actually holds them accountable. So I'm glad you guys are ready for that.
Yeah,
so that kind of dovetails into the discussion. You can see Biden already doing it. He wants to talk about that Trump is a threat to democracy, you know, a threat to the Republic and all that stuff.
Right.
And this is the guy whose allies spend every day trying to remove his principal opponent from the ballot, try to throw him in jail, you know, and just remove him and all of his supporters, really. I mean, just make these people not welcome in polite society. So that feeds into, you know, the indictments, all the trials are still going on and the various legal issues that the president faces. In the primary, I think that no one disputes that all of the different indictments and the obvious partisan nature and the flimsy nature of all of these indictments, they helped him very much and strengthened him in the primary. Now, as we, you know, get ready to pivot towards the general, does that same thing hold true? Do you think most Americans will see these things as partisan witch hunt? Or how do you approach those? Because it certainly is a different dynamic, primary versus general election, in the way that these Democrat prosecutors are going after him.
Well, I mean, I think the damage to them, quite frankly, has already been done. Again, all of the public, all the general election polls, everything that are going on right now have Trump, you know, ahead by half a dozen points. But setting aside that, I think that, you know, they've shown their hand. They have all these bogus political prosecutions. Just all the public data, you know, shows that people already know that these are witch hunts, these are political prosecutions. But setting aside, right, setting aside the data, the Democrats have already shown their hand, right? This was their first play. This was their first strategy, is to take them out of the race by you know, weaponizing the DOJ, which is, you know, I hate to even say, but it's, you know, it is what it is. And then, you know, then their backup plan, which is failing spectacularly, which was to deny him access to the ballot. And that, I mean, talk about just putting your deck of cards, literally your hand out there for everyone to see. It's so transparent. They don't want to face them. So, and I think the American people see that. So, you know, but I also don't believe, frankly, that we're going to see a bunch of trials this time. I just don't think we're going to see it. I just don't. I mean, the president's got a squared away legal team. They're aggressive. And I think that I think ultimately, at the end of the day, these things will just be larger, just pushed aside.
You don't think there are going to be trials?
No.
Really?
Yeah. We'll see. But
yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
Wow. Fascinating. Well, Chris, I really appreciate your time. I know
sure,
you're busy.
Guys.
Thanks so much.
Really fantastic. Chris LaCivita, co-campaign manager for the former president of the United States. And in my view, president number 47, Chris LaCivita. That was a good one. Wouldn't you say, Hogan?
Oh, absolutely. He's so knowledgeable of these things, been doing it for so long. And he's on the inside. People want to hear what's going on in these campaigns. And I was giving a speech yesterday in North Carolina to about 115 people in a beautiful part of the country in Western North Carolina and Highlands. And these people were fired up and ready to get to work, had some serious questions. And we did Q&A for like 2 hours. And a lot of the things we just asked Chris, they were asking me. So, you know, getting it from the inside of the campaign, understanding what they're ready for, what they see as potential problems for them, what the Democrats are doing, the efforts that they on their side are prepared to counter with and then actually go on the offense with is, I think, really invaluable. So I great, great interview.
Yeah, really good. And I think the news there at the end is he doesn't think that these are even going to go to trial.
Yeah.
That's pretty striking.
A lot of people say the delays that the attorneys can do will actually be able to go on for quite some time. So,
yeah. Well, we shall see. That was a good one. This has been a fine episode. So thank you, Jay Hogan Gidley. I'm Tim Murtaugh. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.